When he said 2 minutes in, "Daddy, I don't like football," I was like, "You're not my fucking son."
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. It's James. Welcome to Tot and Arse. Change the schedule. Suj got hit by a bus. Don't be scared. That's not a joke. That's true. I'm laughing about it because I know that he's okay, but that's what he messaged me this morning. He said, "James, got hit by a bus. Don't feel great." Hello, Clates.
Should we clarify? Suj is actually all right, and he didn't get hit by a bus. Because, like, fuck, you know.
Yeah, he got hit by a bus.
Did he actually?
Yeah. Well, that's what he told me this morning.
Oh, he told me it was like a dirty migraine or a headache or something.
Yeah, no, I said, I didn't know if he was being serious or not. So I said to him, I thought, how can I message him to clarify if he's saying I've been hit by a bus or I feel like I've been hit by a bus? Because those are two very different things.
Yeah.
But we've all said, "God, I feel like I've been hit by a bus." Like, we've all said that. I said, because he said, like, "Oh, I've got a really runny nose and stuff." And this has nothing to do with being hit by a bus. I was like, "You sure you haven't got a mild concussion or something?" He's like, "No, I didn't get hit in the head."
Flipping out.
So I think he really did get hit by a bus. And okay. Bus, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I know you're all right.
Jesus.
But he's feeling a bit under the weather. Yeah. This guy, I said to Nika, I said, "I really need to get something definite in writing that's got me like Planet FPO is James's."
I'm sure he's sorted all of that.
Yeah, he has. No, I know he has. Hello, Bus. If you're listening, well, lots of love. So sorry to the West Ham fans. As non-advertised, we're not talking about fucking West Ham today. I did watch West Ham's highlights of their 2-2 draw with... who did they play? Fuck. They played someone. Danny scored a nice goal from a free kick. It looked like it was being played on that someone had set up a football pitch on the edge of Glastonbury or something.
Against Ferencváros?
Ferencváros from Hungary, that's it, yeah. Who were a very famous team back in the 50s and the 60s for the older generation. Anyway, Tot and Arse. We'll get to Arse. Clates wants to talk some Arteta stuff. He's been put on the spot a little bit. But first of all, I took Harry to Anfield Town on Saturday.
Was that his debut?
It's his debut. It's probably his swan song as well, actually. So I'd been telling him, I'm taking you football Saturday. And we had a little deal.
Was he excited? Like when
no, didn't give a shit. I had to bribe him, didn't I? Like, right, so this, we have to lay everything out clearly for Harry so he understands. So one, park. Two, football and ice cream. Yeah,
this okay, is nice.
The sell now. Football and ice cream. Three, toy shop.
Nice.
If one and two goes well.
Okay. Right?
So we take him to Aldersbrook Park, which is about a 15-20 minute walk from Enfield Town. Okay? Yeah. Wife comes with. Half two, just getting set to, well, a bit early, maybe 20 past two, just getting set to think about pissing, taking him off. And you heard the fucking noise, didn't you? You know the noise. The fucking ice cream van noise.
Oh.
Right? ice cream. All right, okay. So that's blown, because I knew they'd have all that shit there at Enfield. That's blown my cover at Enfield Town, because now he wants it now. Okay, ice cream. Quarter to three, still in this park, right? It's like, we're not making kickoff. She said, "I'll drop you there." I was like, "You don't really work like that, but you can drop us at like 5 minutes down the road and we can walk through an alley and we might make kickoff." Not that I was fussed about making kickoff. Anyway, as good as little video getting singing there when the Spurs go marching him down the road like a proper hooligan and stuff. Obviously not like a hooligan anyway. He gets there, he's got no clue what's going on. I'm like, "Take a picture outside," because you get Enfield Town versus Tottenham Hotspur in the background. I put it on the Slack channel and stuff. All fine. Goes in. I think it was because you eat old fashions. They've got like, it's turnstile, right?
Yeah.
You go through, you like old school, you buy your tickets. There's only like four of them. That's the only way you get in the ground is through these four turnstiles. Go in, like you'd hear the tannoy saying, "Oh, the teams are coming out," and all that. It was perfect time. I didn't want to get there too early anyway, so it worked out really nicely. So he goes in. I think he was like, oh, this is exciting going in the turnstile. There's going to be something amazing on the other side, I think. He was like, oh, this is interesting. He obviously wasn't. It's just a football stadium with an athletics track on the outside.
It's quite a nice little ground and stuff, though, isn't it, when you get in?
Yeah, so it's you can walk all the way around it. They have, behind both goals, they have, like, I could only call it a structure. You couldn't call it a stand. A structure that's probably around about the length of the penalty area, so it doesn't go from corner flag to corner flag behind both goals. But it's just basically something to stand on.
Yeah.
And it goes back 5 or 6 steps, basically. So you can get a little bit of a raised perspective. And on the far side, they have like a little seat in which goes back about 3 rows. That probably goes back, probably like the width of like the middle third of the pitch. And on the near side, they have this cafe area. Now, remember, an athletics track goes all the way around this, but the two stands behind the goals are within the athletics track. So it's not like at West Ham. They're literally right behind the goal. The stand on the far side is over the top of it. So it's like a temporary, you could move it. On the near side where you walk in the ground, they have like, I don't know, like the cafe area. It's weird to explain. So it's behind the athletics track. So the athletics track's in between you. And the dugouts are in between the athletics track and the pitch. So it's like it's a building. It's the weirdest football stand you've ever fucking seen in your life, right?
I've still never gone. I've
it's like a massive building that I think essentially was used as like dressing rooms and stuff for like school events, I'm guessing.
Right.
Because there's an athletics track. Remember, this hasn't been Enfield Town's home forever. It's only been like the last decade or so. So the only seats in this are up high. So you have to go inside and you go around this like circular staircase, and then inside there's like a bar. And then you can go outside and there's seats, which most have a restricted view, I have to tell you, by the way. And it's probably about 30 or 40 seats up there.
Right.
And you have to pay £2 extra to sit up there. But I've gone up there before. I never give anyone my £2 extra because no one's ever told me. You can stand up there as well. So it's like an outdoor area where people will get their drinks from their bar and they just kind of hover on like this terrace. And you've got a decent view of the pitch and stuff up there as well. That's nice. The only way to get an aerial view. Downstairs, in the downstairs bit of the building, that's where all the changing rooms are and stuff like that, I presume. So anyway, gets in there. And I didn't really have like a set plan of what I was going to do with Harry, but because there's like fencing all around the pitch, you could sit him on it. Like my dad used to sit me back in the day on an old crash barrier, say on the clock end at Highbury, if we played at Arsenal, for example. So a little bit like that, you almost sitting. If I let him go, mate, he was on the pitch within 1 second.
Yeah, you just need to hold him very tight.
So I sat him there, literally, and I was quite surprised. There was 1,000 there. I was quite 1,066 or something the attendance was, and I told Harry that he was one of them, and he didn't give a shit. So we went quite near behind the goal that Tottenham were attacking in the first half, which was near the entrance anyway, and I sat him on it and put my arms around him from behind to make sure he couldn't go anywhere. And within about 30 seconds, he was trying to get down.
Oh, wow.
I sat him there.
But was he trying to get down because he was uncomfortable or he didn't really like what was going on?
No, he wasn't interested, mate.
Ah, right.
He wasn't interested. So within about a minute, we're on the attack and the ball's in the box and Will Lankshear, you felt like you could touch him. And I was like, fucking hell, Will Lankshear's beefed up. More on Will Lankshear in a bit. And I said to Harry, like, oh, go on, Will. No interest whatsoever. I was like, the ball's right there. Look, because Harry really loves motion.
Yeah.
So what I thought is if he could see people running and stuff.
If he could see it in the flesh, he might be
quite interested. So that was right there in front of him. It was one of them where I'm grabbing as well. And I think if a shot comes in, it goes just wide. I've got to fucking get one arm in front of his face and stuff because he's so close. Nah, he wasn't having it. He wasn't interested. It was about another 30 seconds. And I was trying to hold him still. And I was like, you know, whispered, come on, Spurs, trying to get him saying stuff. And he just went to me, Daddy, I don't like football.
Oh, bless him.
And I was like, I fucking run on a pitch. Fuck you. Oh, no, obviously not. This
were there
is
any goals
this
in
is
the game?
2 minutes in. And I'd said to Serge, like, you know, I knew that it would be like a miracle if we made it to halftime.
Yeah.
And I was well prepared for that. And I thought, if I can get a 20 minute, 25 something, or at least have him have something where he's mildly interested. So I thought, I'll start walking him around the ground.
Yeah.
Because you could walk all the way around. I thought, well, that'll kill some time. And on the way, you might hear some noise that interests him. He wasn't bothered by the crowd at all, which
That's
was really,
really
good.
Yeah.
Because I thought he might be. Even things like announcements on the tannoy when we were going in.
Quite loud.
I thought he might be bothered by that. He wasn't. So we started walking around. And I realized we was essentially walking to fucking nowhere. So I was like, do you know what? Let me go in the upstairs bit in the calf, see if I can get him something there, like a bag of crisps or something that will appease him for a minute. He's not having another ice cream, the little fucking shit. Ice cream, no more, seriously. He goes up there, the queue to this bar, I was like, fuck. So I took him in that seating bit up the top.
Did
and
you
at
pay
the
your
back,
£2?
No, fuck no. If someone had asked me, I'd have paid it, no problem. But took him up the back, and it was like a seating bit at the back. Really weird, because there ain't many seats up there. There was a bit that didn't have any seats. You sat basically on a step. Great little view, except for this one massive pole that blocked about half of one half. But that was the end that Enfield were attacking, so I wasn't that fucking bothered. So we sat out there. We scored. He had no fucking interest
that's what
whatsoever.
I wanted to know.
I don't think he even know. He had one bit, was in a video I posted on Slack, where I was their goalie was taking a goal kick, and I said, watch, the ball's going to go really high. And he was watching, and the ball did go really high to the extent nearly didn't see it.
Oh, wow.
And he pissed himself laughing. Aww. And I thought, I've got something.
Yeah.
I've got fucking something where he's shown a bit of interest, where the ball went really high. And he was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, yeah, go watch Premier League football. You ain't going to see too much of that, mate. But, so, and we sat there for about 15 minutes. And he was good eyes. He wasn't really watching it, but he was calm. I didn't need to. He wasn't like, oh, I need the phone. Or he sat there. I don't think he was paying much attention. And it was also probably a bit far for him.
Yeah, true.
Actually. But he sat there quite nicely for a while. Our daddy, toys. I was like, we need to stay here for a bit. Football first, then toys. And he sat there quite calmly and stuff. I don't think he gave a shit.
Yeah. How did you feel like his kind of reactions and stuff? How did that make you?
No, it was largely expected. So it wasn't like I wasn't. When he said 2 minutes in, daddy, I don't like football. I was like, you're not my fucking son.
Yeah.
But I kind of expected it.
That's really impressive. How old is he?
Five.
Five. To be like that self-aware at 5 years old, to just kind of say what you know you don't like, I think that's quite impressive.
This is, the guys will notice from like being dad last year, for Harry to communicate that sort of thing now is massive.
That's what I mean.
Because he wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah.
There's the psychology on me that's like, well, I went every week when I was six.
Yeah.
But for those who've listened to Being Dad, and I recommend all of you do from last year if you haven't,
of course,
you've got to think Harry's not really five. Harry's
no,
more like
developmental.
Three.
Yeah.
He's more like three. So at 3 years old, do I expect him to be interested? No. So it was about 20 minutes in, and I took him back down, and I thought, okay, I'll walk around the whole pitch once, and if he wants to go, we'll go. So I took him to the end at Enfield. We're attacking, walked him that way. And I knew there was no exit. There was no way out. And he's like, I need exit. I need exit. I'm like, you're a fucking bitch you are, right? I need exit. I'm like, well, we've got to walk all the way around. And he's like, he clocked. He was like, no, this is the wrong way.
Oh,
and I was like, look, come here this side. I was just killing a bit of time. But when we got behind the goal that end, and I didn't walk towards the kind of shitty little six row stand that they were standing on. He's seen the athletics track, like behind the goal where you've obviously got the big bend, but we've walked there and he thinks it's Christmas, mate.
Oh, wow. That got him going, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
I didn't say anything to him.
What did he do?
1 second he was standing next to me walking and then he wasn't. And I turned around and he was in the position on the track like he was going to go sprinting.
Oh, wow. Bless him.
And I just said to him, 3, 2, 1, go. And he was off. And he ran the
Did
bend.
Did you do the whole thing?
No, you couldn't do the whole thing.
Oh, okay, right.
Because on the two sides, like I said, where the position of the stand is on the far side, it's blocked, it's over the track. So it's blocked. But you could run the bend. He ran that bend back and forth 5 fucking times, mate.
Oh, that's class.
And I just cut it off in the middle. Because I didn't have to run the bend. He ran it at the same speed that I was walking across it. But he loved it. He was like, this is good. And I thought, you know what? Okay, it wasn't for the football. But then he had something there that he went for and he enjoyed it. So if I took him there again, because I know what he's like, if he doesn't like somewhere, he'd be like, no. If I took him there next year, he might be like...
He might remember that.
The fucking athletics track. That's good. Now I took him to a shop, then we took him out. It was fine.
Ah, nice.
So, the moral of the story is, Harry won't be going to White Hart Lane this season. There's absolutely fucking no chance. Unless I had to take him, and I think if I did, he'd be sitting there with an iPad on his lap or something like that, with very little interest to the football. So that answers the questions for the next year. But it might just suddenly come. My intention is to watch a lot of probably the Europa League games at home this year and stuff, and they'll kick off. Our away games in Europa League will probably be like 5:45. So there'll be a sort of time where he might, whatever.
Might tune in for a little bit.
Anyway. That was what happened with Harry on Saturday. He's doing very well. He is doing really well at the moment, actually.
Good to hear.
Then we had the Euro final Sunday, which we've spoken about, and I have no wish to speak about again. Then on Wednesday night, I tried to force Harry to watch lots of Hearts of Tottenham with me, but didn't. But I did successfully put him in the bath during the second half, so he didn't have much fucking choice because there was nothing else going on. So he was in the bath, and I hung the iPad over the sink and just left it resting there. So
did he watch any of it?
I took his toys away, everything, mate. I was like, if you want to do something, watch the football away in the bar. I didn't take his toys away. I'm not that fucking wicked. No, he didn't have much interest. I was not fucking impressed that I was bathing him while watching Tottenham, because she's come home fucking rattled, right? Amazon. We've got this Amazon, do my fucking head and get on with it. She's ordering something from Amazon every fucking day, this woman. Our Ring doorbell is a bit of a fucking mare. It will be great. And then just all of a sudden, it's not working. And you it's not like you get a notification if it's not working or something like that. There's no connection, whatever. Anyway, Amazon tries to turn up. This is about 15 minutes before Tottenham are kicking off. And she's got a notification. Sorry, we tried to deliver. You weren't home.
Okay.
Now, obviously, we are.
You're home.
All three of us are there sitting there. She's like, well, he didn't knock us. I'm like, babes, most people think if there's a Ring doorbell, you're going to get the notification. You open the fucking door. You don't, right? You can't. Oh, I'm going to tell all their drivers. You ain't going to tell all their fucking drivers. Like, you get the same driver every time. So anyway, long story short, the Amazon driver came back 7 o'clock in the morning, yesterday morning, and dropped it off. So it's fine. So she's got her shit. She's in a fucking mood now, isn't she? I need that. I'm going to cancel the order. I'm like, can I just fucking watch Tottenham?
For fuck's sake.
Yeah. Seriously. I'll bath him. Don't worry. And then it's like the second half starting. It's 8 o'clock and you still haven't put him in the bath. Okay. I'll fucking deal with the child. So, deals with a child. The first half had been good, I would say. It was already quite clearly worlds fucking away from, and I mean this, anything I'd watched over the last month from any team.
Yeah.
And I recognise we were playing a team from, with all due respect, the third best team in Scotland, which on a good day is championship level, right? And they gave us some trouble in the first half, actually, largely through us being wide fucking open when we lose the ball, the same shit you've seen last year.
How strong was your team?
We'll give everybody a chance. Well, this is the best bit, right? Because the team dropped at 6 o'clock. And I just pissed myself fucking laughing, mate. Because the back four was Pedro Porro at right back. Cool. Brilliant. Yeah, the rest gets quite funny. Centre back, Archie Gray. Who's just been signed from Leeds, who we've told Tottenham have bought him as a midfielder and he covered at right back last year. Oliver Skip, centre back.
Yeah.
Which we did see in the Newcastle friendly in the postseason game, but clearly not a centre back. And Jamie Donnelly at left back.
I don't know anything about Jamie Donnelly.
So Jamie Donnelly's like James Maddison.
Oh wow.
that's his position. He's like James Maddison. And also has the same problem that James Maddison has, is that he's not fucking quick enough. It's really gonna hamper Donnelly. He's not fast. But he's eye for the pass, great. So obviously in Ange's system, yeah, okay, you start there, mate, and you just wander into central midfield, yeah. And you go and you get on the ball and it'll be nice. And he did absolutely fine. But you do see it and you're like, okay, what am I going to get from Tottenham this year? Right, we've picked one defender for the first game. And this one defender is Pedro Porro, who's one of the most offensive defenders in the league. So inevitably, when we lost the ball and we got countered on, we were in massive fucking trouble, even against Hearts. So those same frailties were still there. And also, you've got predominantly midfield players playing at the back.
Yeah.
Archie Gray did really, really well. You know what he is? The thing that stuck out about him, he's decisive. Even if he doesn't get it right.
Impressive for an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
To be saying that.
Even if he doesn't get it right, I'm going to commit to go and win that header. I'm going to commit to go and win that tackle.
You don't see him caught in too. Yeah, that's good.
He's decisive. And also on the ball as well, obviously looks very, very comfortable and stuff. Real, real plus. That's clearly not where he's going to play. So difficult to judge. But for him to play that position, like he stood out as one of our best players playing out of position as a centre-back in the first half. Very, very comfortable. He did get caught out a couple of times where his decisiveness got him into trouble because he got beat to a ball, but that's fine. He did really well. Jamie, very comfortable on the ball at left back. The attacking end of it was obviously largely first choice. So you got Kulusevski and Maddison, both played as left and right-sided 8-10 hybrids in front of Bissouma. Kulusevski a little bit deeper than Maddison, as per the Tottenham's right side is more of an 8 and the left side is more of a 10. Brendan Johnson on the right, Sonny up front, Manor Solomon on the left. Manor Solomon we hadn't seen since Liverpool had a very good goal disallowed at White Hart Lane. That was his last appearance. He's obviously had injury problems. Nice to see him fit. He's not fucking good enough.
No, I don't,
I'm not sure what he is. I mean by that is, like, what do you bring to the team for me? You're quick. You're okay on the ball. You don't make decisive off the ball runs. You're not a brilliant dribbler. Your technique's not outstanding. You're okay.
Yeah.
You're a squad pack. Listen, they got him on a free transfer. Yeah. I get it. But it was probably a surprise to see him starting rather than, say, Timo Werner. Now, there might have been an element of, well, let's have a little bit of experience with what we're going to do in the second half.
Yeah.
Because the second half obviously gets whacked over in terms of what the team is. So, change goalkeeper. Brandon Austin played the first half. Alfie Whiteman plays the second half. So, switched it massively. Jed Spence played right back in the second half. And it was a surprise that he was in the squad because all the build-up from we'd had a game with Cambridge behind closed doors and all the word was that Spence and Reguilón weren't involved. So, it's like they're back with a squad, but they're kind of jettisoned. They ain't fucking a part of this. All right,
was fine. Reguilón part of this squad against Hearts? But Spence was.
I'll come back onto him in a second. So Spence at right back. Centre backs look stronger now, ironically. Emerson Royal, who has played there, and Ashley Phillips, who's a young boy we got from Blackburn, was on loan at Plymouth last year, who is a natural centre back. Left back was Max Robson, who is a multifunctional midfield player. In front of that, Tyrese Hall, Lucas Bergvall and Alfie Devine. On the right, Super Mikey Moore. On the left, Timo Werner. Up front, Will Lankshear. 30 seconds into the second half, we're playing the ball at the back. Emerson Royal cuts inside, the experienced fucking head here, and has a pass cut out and Hearts equalise. And you're like, oh, what the fuck? And with Emerson, he's obviously been linked with moves away. Like, if there was one player he didn't want to make a preseason mistake, I really didn't want it to be you because I don't mind if you hang around. You're fine as an understudy. but he's not as good on the ball as many of these kids who played in the team. I can only tell you, Clates, and I'd certainly recognise that Hearts made some changes as well, but they also brought on Shankland, who was in the Scotland squad, who's their star striker. He played the second half rather than the first half. Those kids played some unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, that's what my...
They were such a fucking joy, man.
My flatmate's a Spurs fan, and when I came back in, he was buzzing with what he saw with some of the youngsters, yeah.
If you said to me now, he's going to pick a team at QPR tomorrow, and I'll be at Loftus Road. You said if he's going to pick that team that played in the first half or the second half, I'd rather watch that team play in the second half, all them
kids. Wow.
They were brilliant.
I did see the move for Johnson's goal looked quite nice.
Kulusevski pulls off this ridiculous flick that's a 1-2 for Maddison, and it's the same goal we always... You know the goal I'm talking about. Then Maddison flashes it across, and Johnson times his run really well. And we scored that same goal in the fourth goal we scored in the game as well, which was converted by Jed Spence.
Okay.
And I can only tell you, Clates, that Jed Spence played really well.
Okay.
I think there was an element of the opposition had nothing to throw back. He looks quite lackadaisical at times. I also think it's an aura that he gives off a little bit. But I couldn't say that he wasn't working hard. And when he got the ball, he moved into Porro areas and dribbled with the ball. He was the one who arrived for that fourth goal from the right back position to bundle it over the line from a couple of yards. I say bundle, that's harsh, finish. And we had a breakdown of a corner where it came back to him. This is at 1-1. And he drives at him. And the timing of the pass that he plays into Will Lancashire for the goal... absolutely brilliant.
I mean, there's a chance they've seen something in training, and like the fact that he wasn't in the first squad.
Something's now happened there since.
Yeah. I mean, there's a chance he stays, basically.
Obviously, there's no footage from that Cambridge game, and there's nothing to even definitively say what the team was. It doesn't exist. It's just insiders saying Tottenham won that game 7-2 and they were 5-0 up at half time. That's all we know. But we think that Spence wasn't involved. And the assumption was, right, him and Reguilón are most definitively available for transfer. They're gone. And you're thinking, considering we've got no Udogi, Romero, Van de Ven, Dragosin at the moment, any defender that's available is going to kind of be a part of this squad. He might get another chance off of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good. Was good. And also he's then walking into a scenario where he's suddenly one of the experienced players.
Yeah.
Because this team's full of fucking babies now. And he did all right. Genoa had an option to buy him for like 8 million or so, but they kept lowballing it. And so Tottenham have told him to fuck off. And they're looking, as far as I'm aware, they're looking for someone else to buy him. We do have a homegrown problem that we've covered several times over, and he does solve it. However, there's a really easy fix for this homegrown stuff now, and it's just sell anybody you fucking want because these kids are good enough.
Yeah, okay. Fair. You think they're good enough to... How many of them can actually make the step up and contribute significantly in the Premier League?
I think that there are 4 or 5 of those that are capable of being in the World Cup squad for England.
Wow.
I think... this is the best crop of kids I've ever seen at Tottenham.
Yeah.
By miles. That team, the attacking team that played on the pitch in the second half, in my opinion, if it played every week, would not get relegated.
In the Premier League?
Yeah. They'd stay up. They'd need a strong defence behind it, so they'd need Romero, Van de Ven, Udogi, Porro and Vicario. But from the attacking side of it, yeah, I think they'd stay up.
Play, big claim. So who are like some of the 3, 4, 5 that you'd like to see contribute in the first team this season then?
Where do I start here? So Tyrese Hall is a little bit lightweight at the moment. He looks it, but he's had a really, really good year of development. He's only 18. He was one I mentioned to you after the Newcastle game in May, that he was someone who, once he gets in, people will like him really, really quickly. Because he just wants to go and get the ball off people, and he's really calm. He's head up. He can play on the half turn. He's a proper six. There's definitely defensive side to his game that's going to need massive improvement. And I think there would be a reluctance, arguably, in a first team game to put him in. as a number six at the moment.
Sure.
Would I rather have another year of Pierre-Emile Højbjerg or have this boy integrated in a slow fashion? Yes. I think Tyrese is one, once he gets in, he might stay in as well, though. I think he's a really, really good footballer. The attacking guys are a joke. Lucas Bergvall stands out massively because of this bleach blonde hair. I mean, having now seen him as well, I'll be checking his fucking like passport if he's really 18.
Really?
That's an astonishing talent. And he's powerful. He's, you know, he's 6'1".
He looks
like a man.
Is he the one that reminds you of Odegaard? Or was that someone else?
Okay. That's your boy, Lucas Bergvall. Signing from a Swedish club, Djurgårdens. Sorry to Victor Sundell, who's going to absolutely rip me for that pronunciation, but I don't care. Sorry, mate. Was obviously joined permanently. One of the reasons Tottenham got him was he was told in January that when you come in, you're going to be involved in the first team.
Yeah, and I think that's where Europa League helps, right?
I can... Forget that, mate. It'd be fucking pushing for this team anyway, mate. He's a brilliant, brilliant talent. He had a moment... We're winning 5-1, admittedly. The opposition's gone. He's playing as a right-sided eight. And he goes in between the centre-backs and receives the ball. And he's got someone coming to press him. And he waits and waits and waits for this press to come. And flips it round the corner on the outside of his foot to Tyrese Hall. And it's obviously at the same time, he's drawn the press, moved it, gone, boom. Give me the fucking ball back. Hall gives him the ball back, receives it, opens his body, 20-yard pass. Bang, in between two Hearts players, in between the lines to Alfie Devine. Devine then plays another vertical pass. Dane Scarlett's through 1-on-1, 5 seconds.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, mate. There's a proper fucking player there, Lucas Berg. He'll be involved in the first team. He'll be in the 20 that's at Leicester on the Monday night. I'm certain of it. I said to Suj yesterday on the FPL pod that if Pap Sarr's injured at the moment, we think it's minor. But
do you think he could get in?
On what I saw,
what's the pecking
order? He is not going to be out of place just going in that team.
Yeah, it'll be
technically, he's fantastic. Three key passes, two big chances created. He's going and picking the ball up with the centre backs, going and interlink on that right hand side of the pitch in the same way Pap Sarr does.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it translates to like Premier League men's football, because then distances are shorter, time on the ball's less. So I'm always interested to see how it translates from youngsters into the men's game.
As the left-sided eight, Alfie Devine played, who had also went with Ashley Phillips to Plymouth on loan last year, had a really good spell at Port Vale in the first half of last season as well. He's our youngest ever goal scorer. He scored in that game against Marine, you might remember, in the FA Cup years ago when he was still 16. But he's still only 19. Really good talent as well. He's going to be a really good central midfield player. Really, really good player. He just didn't stand out next to Bergvall.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's... Bergvall is unavoidable. It is a little bit like the, you know, like the Mark Cucurella thing with that, the fucking... The hair. These players are so... You can't miss them. You can watch certain games and feel like, well, was that player involved? Bergvall stands out so much. I don't think you watch a game and not, oh, did Bergvall play today? That'd be impossible.
Your eyes are just drawn to them, yeah.
A little bit. Alfie Devine was really good as a left-sided eight. Really nice link with Timo Werner on that side. And he went and floated really nicely. So he'd have points where, no, I'm just going to go and wander onto the right-hand side. Real nice freedom about his play. Also wants to drop short. He's got a really good range of his passing. Ahead of him, Mikey Moore, who's probably better off the left-sided of the front three, played on the right side, scored a terrific goal. Once Bergvall got it, I know he's going to score. He really does remind me of Jack Grealish is the name that it really reminds me of. And to please some of the guys who think Jack Grealish's flair has been coached out of him, think of young, innocent Jack Grealish. Mikey Moore, I have to remind people all the time, he's 16. Is a joke of a fucking talent. The big challenge for Mikey, I think, in future years will be defining what he's going to be. Because I think like that position he played on Wednesday night is not where he's going to end up. Super talent. Tottenham going to be very, very careful with him, I think. The one that's really stood out, though, and he only played 22 minutes, was Will Lankshill up front, who Harry took no interest in at Enfield Town. So he played at Enfield. He scored twice. And again, something's happened from that Cambridge game where, I don't know, someone's not been out of train or something. It might have been that Brian Hill wasn't available. It might have just been a gap opened up and they've gone, yep, yeah, come and train with the first team. I think I would rather he start the season for us than Richarlison.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think he's got it, Clates. Having watched him now, seeing him live where I could nearly touch him on Saturday, I was like, fucking hell, look at you. You're playing against men here in a kids' team. God, you're a powerful. Reminded me of someone, and there's an obvious link. He plays for Bayern Munich now.
Okay.
And the movement for the goal off Spence, you could see it coming a mile off what he was going to do.
Right.
But you couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
And when he's got played in, some players just give you an aura. He's scoring now. Buries it bottom corner. In that 20 minutes, his link play, his hold-up play, his aerial duels, his ability to run in behind, his pressing, he looked like a prototype of what an Ange Postecoglou number 9 should be.
Interesting. How old is this guy?
Will is 18 or 19, I think. They got him from Sheffield United a couple of years ago. And there's been a lot of talk of him going out on loan and interest from championship clubs particularly. And if that's what Tottenham decide to do this year, then that's absolutely fine. I've no problem with that because, you know, Harry Kane certainly benefited from that. He's 19, Will Lancashire.
But like you're saying you'd be tempted Leicester away him instead of Richarlison.
What I'm saying here is not what Ange is going to do, right?
No, but
he's going to play Son there or he's going to play Richarlison there's fit. Richarlison is not going on this tour to Asia, which they're going on following the game at QPR tomorrow. I'm not going to get 38 games out of Richarlison.
No.
If Tottenham can get the money, which keeps being mentioned from Saudi Arabia, they should fucking take it and not block this kid and these other kids' paths.
I don't think their paths are blocked with the Europa League, though. I feel like that's the perfect tournament where you can give them a healthy amount of minutes, like the odd Premier League period.
Well, perhaps to answer your question, perhaps a better analysis would be, rather than, you know, they'd stay up in the Premier League, if that attacking six that played at Hearts in the second half, if they played in the Europa League, would we get out to at least the playoff round rather than be eliminated? Yeah, we'll get out. Yeah, they'll equip themselves fine. It's only 12 teams from 36 get eliminated, Clates.
Yeah, but I'm always sceptical about the confidence in youth talent translating to men's football. Just because, like, you hear it all the time, and then, like, how often do many of them actually go on and make it? It's always less than people envisage. But
and yeah, it's absolutely certain from these really good, talented players that I've mentioned that a few of them are not.
Yeah.
Absolutely aware of that. I can tell you that is definitely that Bergvall and Mikey Morgill.
Yeah. And as a fan, like, that's some of the most exciting bits of preseason are kind of getting to know a lot of these talents a lot more and understanding their profiles, I guess, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, that was such a nice jolt after England.
Yeah.
Of watching, I mean, you couldn't tell in terms of how they played. If I dropped you, you wouldn't have known that was a kids' team in the second half. You'd have gone, this is just Tottenham again.
Yeah.
If you didn't know the names and all that, you'd go, Tottenham is fluid. You'd go, this is better, actually. And maybe as well, in terms of with young players, if they're schooled into something as a philosophy, they're schooled into it. Whereas some of the older players have obviously been trained under it's different techniques, learn. Different yep. players. In a weird way, yeah. In a weird way. I think a lot of these kids you're going to see and hear a lot of this year, and I'm really positive about that. Genuinely, if Tottenham sold Richarlison and did not replace him, and they went, yeah, do you know what? Going to give this boy a go.
Yeah,
I know what that looks like, right? That looks like, oh, this is going to be difficult to finish top four and stuff like that.
Well, what would you say the objectives?
But your longer term good of that might be really, really positive.
What would you say the objectives are for Tottenham and for yourself this season? Because last year it was very much kind of free pass. You just want to see positivity, kind of fall in love with your club again. What would you say it is this season?
It's Champions League qualification. I think you've got to put that as a target there now. Ange will only have one target.
What's that?
First, I'll tell you that now. It's not my target. That will be his target. And when he's 15 points behind in March, he'll be like, "We still got a chance, mate." That's good. That's good, Ange. Cheers, mate. But this time, when we're battling for fourth, can you let the players know that it is quite important? Would be appreciated at the same time. So, I think this year it would be right. You finished fifth. It would be right to put that target there to go, okay, one more. And obviously, look, you could finish fifth next year, and the chances are that would be enough for Champions League. So, same again with more consistency, not to have the end of the season that we had. And yes, you're putting more pressure on results. We'd have to look back and go, right, where would we have finished if you took them first 10 games away from last season? We don't qualify for Europe. So there is a definite improvement that needs to be there if you want to finish top four, circa top five. You know the majority around you. Newcastle, I know, are going to be better. Chelsea will probably be better. Manchester United will think they're going to be better. Villa will think they're not going away. City yourselves and Liverpool aren't going anywhere, obviously. So look, it's competitive. But yeah, target wouldn't have to be now to qualify for the Champions League. That would be a fair target.
Fair play.
But if these kids all got in the team and we finished sixth, seventh, and I felt as positive at the end of next season as I kind of feel now, I would take that. Because I think where it could go if you manage to integrate these kids into the team correctly is the best chance we've got of winning the league. It's not spending 80 million on this player. We've got to do things differently and accept who we are as a football club. The best chance we've got is this. A group all gets in the team together and you can fuck and they just go.
Yeah, you've been consistent.
That's the best chance that we've got.
Yeah.
So if you can make this work, if that means it has to be one step back for two forward, I would take that. So with context, if we finished sixth next year and at the end of the year, Bergvall, Moore, Lancashire, Hall are all starting and you're like, well, this looks really positive for the future. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sorry, I went on a bit too much there.
No.
You wanted to talk about your Spanish manager who's a bit shit. He won the England job. That'd be good, wouldn't it? By the way, Ange's obviously been linked for the England job, hasn't he?
I saw that interview on Sky Sports,
And Daniel Levy wants Pep Guardiola. But I do think that's positive for England. Just a small thing I just did want to say. If England are looking at Ange, that does say that they have a realisation that the football needs to change.
Yeah.
So take that as a positive. Go on,
it'd be so interesting, though. Go from, like, defensively solid and no attacking fluidity to the complete opposite.
Oh, you'd not go batshit crazy under Ange. Yeah. You'd go batshit under him.
Yeah, no, not much on the Arsenal front. It's very quiet transfer window-wise, but we've not actually started any preseason games. We had one behind closed doors as well, but ours starts next week against Bournemouth. Annoyingly, it's US time though, so 3 a.m. or something. I'll see if I can stay up for it. I love preseason. Like hearing you talk about how nice it is to kind of see some of the youngsters and stuff. That's my favorite bit. And even the tactical nerd in me, I love seeing, are there any new like tactical layers that we're adding in this season? And that's one thing, Arteta, every season, he's added a new dimension that none of us kind of thought would come in. So I'm intrigued to see what we do next season tactically. But he's done a couple of interviews with the club, and obviously in press conferences, he's a little bit more guarded and stuff. But it was a really nice interview just internally with the communications team, where he's just very open and very relaxed. But fuck me, I don't know if you've seen the thumbnail of it. He has aged. He looks like,
I think
he look, if you see the picture of him, fuck me, you can tell this guy's gone toe to toe with Pep. I don't know how Klopp did it for so many years. Like he has,
and lost, yeah,
and lost. He has fucking aged, and it in just a short period of time. Because like, I saw a clip of him doing the rounds about 5-6 weeks ago, and he didn't look like this. So yeah, bless him. He's struggling at the minute. But the interview was really interesting. Like he spoke a lot about kind of key topics that I think were part of our downfalls last season. So he was mentioning a lot about kind of player availability and stuff. And it was so interesting hearing him talk like holistically about how he's planning the season and kind of looking at it in chunks. Obviously, there's going to be extra games with the new Champions League format, but there was one thing he said which was really interesting to me, and it was like, obviously, at this level that we've got to now, the margins are so tight. So, like, I think 2, 3 years ago, there were gaping holes that we could plug to try and improve the squad. But he said one sentence, which was, looking back, it was the efficiency in the boxes and how we can be more efficient. And I was looking at this, like, okay, what does that mean? And I think loads of people go and scream, like, oh, it means a number nine. Like, because I look at that Aston Villa game at home, and obviously Villa deserved to win, but we created chances that day. And I look at his comments and I'm thinking, okay, what are we actually going to do? I combine it with, like, in the transfer market, the rumors are quiet. Usually, I think there's consistency and, okay, like, we're linked with this position, we're linked with this position. There's not really much of that going on.
Do you think that's because of, a lot of that's because of England, though?
Possibly, but I still feel like there's
Because I feel like he's suddenly gone really quiet on Tottenham as well.
Oh, has it? Okay,
Yeah.
maybe. Like, we're linked with that Calafiori quite strongly, the Bologna and Italy defender. And even that, I can see, I'm thinking that. I look at the games that I think Arsenal really struggled in last season. I'm thinking, like, Newcastle away, Liverpool away, City away to score. Like, I think we had chances, but not really clear cut. Bayern away, I never felt second half we were going to score. The one thing I've been consistent in, I think Arsenal are lacking, is the ability to drive through lines. I think we've got a very good system in place, but the minute we face a mid block, it gets uncomfortable. And I think there were periods where we got okay with unlocking them, but I just to come back to that comment on, like, when you hear we need to be more efficient in the box, how do you interpret that?
It's interesting because I mean, weren't you the best team on set pieces?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that comes to mind. I'm sure they were near enough, best on
And
set
we
pieces.
massively outperformed our expected goals. So we expected goals last year just in the Premier League was 76.1 according to FBref. We scored 86 goals.
Yeah, there were the little bit of the anomaly in there. You had that 3 or 4 game period where you scored like
Yeah, it
15
was,
goals, didn't you?
yeah, of course, yeah.
Otherwise, it probably levels about right, probably.
Yeah, but
And also, there was a period I feel like you were well under it, and that period changed it. So,
yeah, that was the December period. I remember that clearly. But yeah, it was just that comment on, because again, a lot of the narrative seems to be, and I remember we did a pod on this in like January where every man and their dog was like, Arsenal need a number nine. I was like, I don't think we do. For me, the attacking group is capable. I think we've got a nice variety of profiles there in like wingers and centre forwards in Havertz, Jesus, Trossard. I don't think it is a number nine, but I hear that comment of like we need to be more efficient in the box, and I'm like, okay, what does that mean? My interpretation is, yeah, you need to kind of be. You spoke about decisiveness. I think there's a lot of times I watch Arsenal, and it's like that decisiveness in converting from the final third into the penalty box isn't quite there, and I interpreted it like that. But yeah, I'm not really sure where we're heading in terms of recruitment planning and stuff, but he was very candid. He was very open about what he's thinking. But with him, I just think he's on another stratosphere with what he's thinking that I can never really predict what's going to happen. So I'm excited to see what happens. I think there's clear areas for improvement, even though the margins are small, where, like I said, those specific games I mentioned, it didn't really feel like we were going to score. And I think there's, yeah, for me, the ability for Arsenal to now create powerful transitions is probably the next step. I want to be able to go to Anfield, go to the Etihad, and actually just consistently trouble them. And that's where I think the margins are very small. But yeah, it's very quiet on the Arsenal front at the minute. But I thought that was a really nice interview. And for the Arsenal fans listening, like, highly recommend go and listen to it. It's nice to just hear him chat when he's very relaxed. And he's very philosophical as well, which I really like. Like, I'm a bit of a sucker for like philosophy and stuff. So it was nice to hear him talking holistically about how he's feeling, the pain of last season, and what might be next.
Think, excuse me, there's possibly an element here of not being able to get what you want. I think. I wonder if Sesko was the real one you wanted and you know that it's staying, and then there's a decision to be made. Do you push back for it for a year and just accept you are what you are? And it's, you know, Trossard can play there, Jesus can play there, Havertz can play there, and Kjaer might stay. Like, you're not like dead on your fucking ass.
Rumoured with going to Marseille, actually, in Kjaer.
And Kjaer?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Has he got any mates who joined him recently? I'd be a bit conscious of that. I don't think that's your biggest problem, though. Well, you don't have many problems. I came to a conclusion on you over the last couple of weeks, actually. Because you know that I think you'll probably win it this year. And I don't think that you're going to need to do anything astronomically better. We've spoken about target 100 points and stuff like that. I don't think you'll need that. Because I think still, unless something changes in the next month, I think City are going to have a drop-off this year. And so matching what you did might even be enough.
And Arteta acknowledged that, actually. Yeah.
I think the concern for you, to go back on your point on dominating, you know, go to St. James's and dominate. These things are fucking easier said than done, even when you're a really good team, by the way. It's the sixth position, actually. I think, having thought about it more, I think the plan was to play Havertz as the eight and probably Declan Rice as the six. And as good as both Rice and Havertz were for you last year, it was better when Rice moved forward and Havertz moved forward. Jorginho and Thomas Partey are not the long-term solutions to the problem in that position.
No.
And that's the only downfall I see, is that position. If you manage to get someone in that position, I don't think it'd fucking matter if you had Richarlison up front, you'd win the league. Huh.
Yeah, I agree. I think midfield is more of a priority as well. And this, I can't remember if I've said this on Planet FPL patron pods or the Arsenal one I do, but Declan Rice is almost like a little bit of a headache, because I agree. Like, I think it was better when Havertz.
This is the point.
Yeah, Havertz was better up top, but there are games where Rice is unbelievable as the six, but there's also games where he's better as the eight and Jorginho comes in or Partey's next to him. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't think we'll sign a midfielder unless Partey goes. And again, it's very quiet on that front, but I think we absolutely need one. And it's similar to the England conversation. Declan Rice is better when he's partnered with a ball progressor.
Yes, this is it. Yeah.
And that's exactly. Yeah. If I could hand pick someone, I'd give me Adam Wharton, please. Pay the money. But
the Rodri's the real solution here. But...
Oh, I meant a real potential realistic one.
This is it. I think
it'll be interesting to see what we do, because we are linked with midfielders. But you said, what's the first choice? What's the first plan? I look at the market, and I think maybe it's the level Arsenal have got to. Like, the pool of players that can actually improve Arsenal now is quite limited. There's not many people I look at that seem to be attainable. I'm like, yeah, you seem like you fit. We've been linked with Mikel Moreno. Obviously, he came on.
Yes, I've seen that, yeah.
That's a link I can see. Is he elite? No. Can he be a nice complement to add to this team to get the best out of Rice and kind of give us that element of control? Yeah, I think he can be. So I agree with you, though. I do think this season there'll be games where Rice is in more of like an advanced eight position, and there'll be games where he's more of like the base. I just think it'll flip quite a lot. But yeah, I do think the midfield dynamics are a little bit of a confusing one that needs to be sorted out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is third world problems, mate. It's not a huge fucking issue for you. But I do think, and absolutely, if my words came across like, oh, Declan Rice had a bad season for Arsenal, like, obviously I'm not saying that at all. I think there's a possible progression problem that I'd only really realised watching him play for England.
And I must say, I do think how it came out against England isn't the same for Arsenal, because systematically we're so much better structured.
There's more tactical layers. But it's obviously still, it goes about
saying. It's still a flaw of his it's not even a flaw. This is the thing. It's like, I never remember anyone saying N'Golo Kante is limited on the ball. It's because you wouldn't judge him on that. But for whatever reason, Declan Rice is now being judged as a ball progressor when he's not. He's one of the most elite ball winners in world football. But I think because Rodri exists, people naturally kind of draw that comparison. For me, like, I think I tweeted, people can't do what Rice can do off the ball, so can we pair him with someone that is better than him on the ball? And that's where I think the Jorginho Rice partnership looked good. When Partey was fit, he looked better with Rice there. So,
and by the way, Declan Rice is very good on the ball.
He is. He's just not elite, in my opinion.
There is a very specific pass. It's the pass that Bergvall played on Wednesday night. Declan Rice not playing that pass.
Yeah.
And he certainly didn't. He played it once for England in seven games.
Yeah.
And in the final,
I thought he was poor in the final.
Yeah. Okay. I don't need to add that. And there's no criticism on him. He didn't have a bad tournament for England. It was fine, right? I think probably more the point that we probably asked him to be something that we should all maybe realise that maybe he's just not.
That's
it. Yeah. And you're also not getting the strength out of him.
Yeah.
In that deeper role either. So I think that might hamper you in some of the biggest games this year. That's all. Because I think you found a nice solution that really worked with Jorginho last year. Like, that doesn't last, I don't think, for a 38-game period.
Of course not. No. Yeah.
And then Partey came in at the end of the season. That's fine. He's also injury-prone, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you need a solution.
Yeah, I agree.
To that area. But I also think you could still win a league without finding it as well.
So that's why I probably slightly disagree. I don't think the solutions we've got right now in midfield are enough to go on and win the league. I for me, midfield is more of a priority than attack. And
I agree with that. And there's little things which we can't measure at the moment. Is like, what if you did lose Odegaard for 3 months? Or,
exactly, yeah.
You know, these sort of things. Listen, we could all say, I think Arsenal win the league. Listen, if Odegaard, Rice and Saliba all got injured together and missed a quarter of the season, you fucked. It's not happening, mate.
Yeah, it's the same for any club. If that happens.
Exactly. Yeah. That's also very, very true. Okay, mate. Thanks for that. Enjoyed
that. Excited for pre-season to start.
And just remember, it's not for everyone's under 21s to go and win at Enfield Town, because yours played there on Tuesday night, by the way. Clayton asked me if I was going when I told him. I was like, no, mate, I'm there now watching Spurs, kids. I'm telling you.
My kids
went there and won, and your kids went there and lost. So there. Put that in my trophy cabinet. Clates, much love. Thanks very much for that. Have a good weekend, everyone. Go Spurs. Cue music, please, Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.